in the sugya of the Perek Vav. Okay, let's go right to Radak. Okay, I hope you have an edition. You have the art scroll. Can you hear me?
Tosha seems to be assuming.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, okay.
Yes.
Okay, okay, okay. We're up to Radak. Let's learn from on page 763. If you have the art scroll editions on page 763, otherwise, it's Perek Vav Pasuk Aleph. V'ashuv, I returned, I saw Armal Amarkovos Yoitzos Mibein Shnei Ahorim. I saw two chariots going forth between the two mountains. V'heharim Horei Nechoshes. The mountains were mountains of copper. Radak says, Maris Arba Malchuyos Shara Oysam Pamayim. This the second time. This Nevu is the second Nevu of seeing four different items. Shav Oid V'ro Oysam Pam Shlishes Nivoy Eres Min Harishonis. Now, I'm sorry, this is the third time. Okay, I'm sorry. This is the third time that we're learning about the Dal Malchios and Sefer Zechariah. We learned about it in, he writes over here in Perek Aleph Pasuk Ches, and Perek Beis Pasuk Aleph. This now is the third time we come across the Dalid Malchios. Shav oid v'ro isam pam shlishas min mivo eres min harishonis, and here it's going to be more elaborate, more than the first time. The Koro Oysam Markovois, and here we are describing the term that we're giving to the Dal Malchios as chariots, Markovois. The Amerkova Arbos Susim. Now, this is a very interesting idea that Amerkova has four horses. Now, Paro, in the story of Yitzias Mitzrayim, there is a lot of discussion there as to how many horses, I don't remember the details. How many horses were pulling the chariots of the Egyptians? Okay, Mivchar Sholishov, Tubu V'yambu. Why are they called the Mivchar Sholishov? If I'm not mistaken, there were three. There were three. That's why they. That's one. The word Sholishov simply means officers. Okay, an officer. There are different. There are different levels of officers, but there is also a discussion as to how many horses pulled the chariots of the Egyptians, and I'm not sure about all of this, and what is going on, Rabbi? And I'm not sure of the significance of all this, but over here in this Radak tells us something very important, that the chariots that we are discussing here have four horses. The Koro Oysam Merkavos, the Hamerkava Arbaos Susim Merkavos, four horses. Laharos Choska Shel Kol Achas Bizmano. The reason why we are referring to each one of the Dalai Malchus with the term Merkava is to indicate their power. When each Malchus, their dominance, okay, their dominance was mighty. Each one has in common, they all have in common, they all cause enormous harm and damage to Klal Yisrael. The Yod also, Roy Sam Shayu Yotzas Mibain Shne Hehodim, two mountains, Vizem Moira Al Choskam Kehoze Kehodim. Okay, so far he just says they're coming from mountains to indicate that their source, their origin is a place of strength. Next, Vehehodim Hare Nechoshes. The mountains were copper. Vuhu HaBarzel HaChoseich HaNikra. This is called Barzel HaChoseich HaNikra. Atzir Belaz, the Yesh Kuma Benikra, the Echamihem Holche Rachil Nechoshes Uvarzel, Shapirushoi, which means Shapirashu Shuchosak Neoven, it is stronger than stone, Shuchoitech, Shuchoisech Upoisel Hoeven, it cuts, it penetrates, stone, the Loseis Lohem Choizek Yoseh. Okay, so the point over here is, okay, this nechoshes, I'm not sure exactly what he means, because he keeps on mixing with barzel. Obviously, it's a very, 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 very tough metal, and he's telling us that it's stronger than stone, and the fact that it says that they're coming from mountains of nechoshes is to indicate of their incredible strength.
I'm reminded of the description of Sichon and Og, where they're considered powerful or formidable, and they come from a tough kind of a territory, which is also difficult. So something like that.
They're hardened. These are people that nothing.
Perth is a rough and difficult territory, so they're toughened.
Right. They're seasoned professionals. These are soldiers that are used to anything. They can take anything. Okay. I met someone recently, and I was in it was bitter cold, and he said to me, I asked him, "Are you cold?" He says, "Me cold? I served in the Navy. I was in the Navy." You know what I'm referring to?
No, but I mean, I'm thinking of my own background in New England, where cold is cold,
He said, "I was in the Navy. I was on a ship. You can't imagine the conditions that I suffered. You cannot imagine what it's like there in the ocean, what it's like, and the intensity of the winds and what we went through. This is nothing." So that's the same thing. These soldiers, this Merkab, they come from mountains, and they're called Hori Nechoshes, which indicates that they can handle anything. There's nothing they cannot handle. That's the simple interpretation. Now he says something very little bit different. He says, he quotes Lavan, the Oid Zohan Nechoshes, the Sheet of Hashem, which, and now I'm not sure what he means by Sheet of Hashem, but over here it's Kemoy Nechashti Vayivarcheni Hashem Biglalecha. Okay, Nechashi, I divined. Lavan said to Yaakov Avinu, I looked into my magical crystal ball, and it told me that my success has only come because of you. You, Yaakov, your presence, your partnership with me has brought me enormous blessing. So here, and he said, he looked into his crystal ball, Nechashti, he divined, whatever that means, whatever the koiches of tumah that he used to figure this out. So here we're saying we're saying that concept as well, that these four malchios, he's saying, I'm not sure what he means. He says, Zohar nechoshes l'shituf Hashem. L'shituf Hashem here means to indicate a partnership which is not a good partnership. Which means Nichashti Vayivarcheni Hashem Biglalecha. It seems like that these four malchios were not religious. I mean, they were religious, but they took advantage of sources of tumah, of koichos haTumah. They were not dealing with a full deck of cards. They were taking. You want to go talk
no,
about?
No, they were using cards from another deck.
Okay, cards from another.
To go outside the natural order to try to invoke powers that are out of bounds.
And so he's saying something very powerful that if we're not going to succeed according to the rules, we will break the rules. There's nothing that we will not do to get our way. That's what it means, Nechashti. Hashem put us into a world where there is Kedusha v'Tahara. And then Hashem created in this world this Koyach of Tumah, the Sitra Achra, whatever that means, which is a force of evil, which wicked people tap into to abuse and commit crimes to get their way.
To use as an advantage over others.
Ultimately, there will be a day of reckoning when they will be punished and they will suffer the consequences. There's no question about that. But in the meantime, temporarily, they do prevail. Hashem did create a force in this world where people that are wicked have the option of being able to take advantage of sources of contamination which allow them to achieve results that are not correct. So he's saying over here, these nations, these Dalamalchios, they come from Hore Nechoshes. According to the Radak, he's saying a very powerful idea. Number one, Hore Nechoshes means they come from a very strong environment. They've been very well trained. They're used to the most difficult conditions. They are soldiers. They are hardened soldiers. When they come to conquer, to dominate this world, they will do so with an iron fist. They will win al derech hateva. And let's say they go out into this world and things don't go their way. So they have other tricks up their sleeve. They will take advantage of not nichush. Nichush is these forces of evil which they will exploit to get what they want, even illegally and unethically. That's how the Radak is explaining why it mentions over here that these people, these individuals, these nations come from mountains of Nechoshes.
Do we see evidence that they practice this? Because the practices that we know of, I think, go much earlier than that.
Okay, obviously, I don't know. I have no idea. I have no idea. Okay, it's a very interesting idea. Okay, v'yad ha'ar malchuyos Yisrael minusim v'yad ha'arba malchuyos Yisrael minusim v'nivchonim. And in the hand of these four malchuyos, the Jewish people, they were minusim, minusim v'nivchonim. Okay, they were minusim and v'nivchonim. They were afflicted. They were afflicted and tested. Okay, the Klal Yisrael suffered immensely in the hands of these Dal Malchus. Okay, so what we learned over here, we're describing with the four chariots. All we learned so far is the Merkava is a term. This is the third time in Sefer Zechariah that we are learning about the Dal Malchus. In this Nevuah, there's something new. We're calling the Dal Malchus by the term of Merkava. Merkava represents Merkava represents. Okay, there's a lot of noise over here. Do you hear a lot of background noise when I'm speaking to you?
Yes.
You do? Okay. Yeah. Okay. There's someone here in the room learning. There's someone here learning with the chavrusa in the room here. Let me ask her. One second.
Somebody in the car. Anyway. It's Chodesh, everybody. Hello.
Okay, let's go. Okay. Let's continue. All right, we have over here the Merkava of the chariots.
Okay, we're in the middle now, Mayor. So.
You know, he's here. The chariot over here. Okay, let's review what we learned. We have over here. This is the third Nevuah of the Dal Malchus. Dal Malchus. I'm sorry. Frel Chanuka. Thank you very much.
You don't have Kadima here.
I don't have Kadima, nothing. But, okay. No, that's not. It's have a good. Thank you very much. We have over here the Dal Malchus. Dal Malchus, this is the third Nevuah. The third Nevuah, we over here, what's unique about this is we describe Dal Malchus with the term Merkava. A Merkava is a chariot. He tells us the Chiddush. A Merkava has four horses. Let's keep that in mind. A Merkava and the Radax on the sitting has four horses. Next, the Merkava over here represents enormous power and might of the Dal Malchus. They come from mountains. Mountains, by definition, means they come from very tough terrain. They're hardened soldiers. They will get their way. And the next concept is Nechoshes. Nechoshes, he says, is stronger than stone to indicate of their power. And next new idea that we have not come across until now is Nechoshes is symbolic of Nechashti, which represents the tapping into impure, illegal, unethical sources of power to get their will, to get what they want, no matter what. No one stands in their way, no matter what. Next, Pasuk Beis. Ba'merkavos susim ha'adudim. Now we learn about the red horse. What are the red horses? Remez l'malchus bavel k'mosh shepirashnu. Everyone agrees to that. The red horse, the red horse is gold. Everyone so far is the same with this idea. The gold has a reddish color, bavel. Bavel in the dream of Daniel is called gold. Next, susim shecharim, black. Hush amar lamala shirukim. This is what it says later on. Who remes lamalchus modei paras. Now he is telling us over here what it says. This goes back to Perek Aleph. Okay, let's put that aside for now. Good morning, Mordechai. Who remes lamalchus modei paras. Kodem lamala shirukim. Before we called them back in Perek Aleph, Perek Beis, Sirukim, streaks, which means they're like they, okay, whatever that word there means, it means like different colors. V'hinei shichayrim l'fi shehem shtei ulois. Af al pi shehem malchus achas. Moda yuparas, this appears, the same idea we have many times, the appears. V'yesh mifarshim ki heroloi govon shichayrim l'fi shehushcharu b'malchusam p'nehem shel Yisrael. This is what Rashi and the Mitzuda said. V'zehoi mehaman, period. So let's go reverse. So far we have over here black. Why are they called black? He's telling us this really is called the same as Sirukim. Black and Sirukim are the same. And what does that refer to? So let's go back very quickly to Perek Aleph Pasuk Ches. Let's go back. Okay, let's go back to Perek Aleph. Perek Aleph Pasuk Ches quickly to get a little clarity on this. Pasuk Ches there says, okay, Melch v'alkol, avalo shemal b'shnochri. I'm in the wrong sefer, one second. Perek Aleph, Pasuk Ches. And it talks about the Acharav Susim Adumim Sirukim Ulevanim. Okay, Perek Aleph, Pasuk Ches. Re'isi halayla, v'hinei ish, rechev al sus. Adoim, a man running on a red horse, v'hu emeid ben ha-hadasim asher ba-mitzula, v'acharav susim adumim sirukim ulevanim. What does it mean, the other word, sirukim? The Mitzuda Istavid there says, it means mitzuyodim bitzvoim michulofim. They have many colors. They are designed with many colors. Multicolored. The Mitzuda Istavid says, there, in that pasuk, he doesn't say. It says they're multicolored. They're called black, susim adumim, red, sirukim. Doesn't say black. It says sirukim, and then it's ulavanim. What does Rashi here say in Perikhes? I don't see any Rashi here. What does the Radak here on this pasuk ches say about the word sirukim? I don't see anything here either in the Malbum. What about the Malbum? I don't see here the Malbum. Sirukim minukadoi, spotted. Bekamo givonim kiperish hamefarshim. Okay, many colors. Now, by the way, what is black? Black is the color which includes all colors. Right? Black absorbs all light. White is exclusive. White is nothing. White is the color which rejects light. White represents a rejection of light. Is that correct, scientifically? Black absorbs all different colors. Black, to a certain degree, is the catch-all for every single color. Is that correct, scientifically? Anyone here want to back me up on that? Any comments? The color black absorbs all is the complete absorption of light. When an object absorbs light, it becomes black, and that's why if you paint your roof black, it's going to be very hot, because if your ceiling, if you have a roof, when people buy shingles for their roof, there are many colors. Every house, you go walk down the block, every house has a different color shingle on their roof. Black shingles. If you buy black shingles, in the winter time you have an advantage, but in the summertime you get a roast. It's going to absorb, it absorbs the heat. White rejects. White is the color that rejects. So I'm just suggesting here that the reason that over here in Perek Aleph we're calling the horses Sirukim, which according to the Mefarshim means multicolored, and here in Perek Vav we're calling the horses Shechayrim, black, it's the same. Why is it the same? Because when you combine together every single color into one unit, it becomes black. And that appears to be what to some degree, at least what the Radak is saying. This that it says over here in Perek Zvav, Shechayrim, is equivalent to what it said in Perek Aleph, Sirukim, which is the multicolored. Here, all of the multicolors are merging into one, which results in the color black. tefillin are black. Why are tefillin black? Okay, our ritzuas are black because it represents the full absorption of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Shekhinah. We associate black with sin, with avelus, death. But the truth is that that's true, but it also represents that when a person leaves this world, now he completely absorbs Hashem's divine presence. In this world, Gashmius is a barrier between spirituality and materialism. And the neshama in this world is unable to absorb Hashem's light, because we're attracted by the physical world. When a person leaves this world, there's no longer any barrier. There's no longer any gashmius which prevents us from absorbing Hashem's light. So if you want to put a positive twist as to why the color black is used, is associated with avelus, with death, it's not negative. It's because when the neshama leaves this world, the neshama is able to absorb Hashem's light. Now, Judaism is very colorful. Think of all the colors you have in Judaism. The tzitzis, what color is tzitzis? White and tzicheles. In the Beis HaMikdash, what was the center of the Mizbeach? The Chut HaSikra. The Chut HaSikra, what color was the Chut HaSikra? Red. Where do we have? I once had a whole list of colors. Where do we have the color green? Where is there a hakpada in Esrog? Esrog is either yellow or green. There's a yellowish greenish color yoroik. For Chazal talk about the different colors of an Esrog. What is the adayik color? But a certain shade of green. Okay, what other colors do we have? Okay, when it comes to, I mean, obviously dam. Okay, there are other, I forgot, there's a whole list of colors. There's a lot of colors in Judaism. Tefillin must be perfectly black. The ritzuas list must be black. It represents, because Moshe Rabbeinu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to Moshe Rabbeinu, what Hashem said to Moshe? Hareini na es kivaydecha. Moshe Rabbeinu said to Hashem, I want to see you. I want to absorb your radiance. I want to absorb your light. Hashem said to Moshe.
We have Tchelus V'Argamon V'Solba Shoni. It's exactly. Various colors.
Right.
The purple. Right. Purple. That's where I was going.
The Mishkan. In the Mishkan, you have all different colors. The Kohen Gadol, the stones. Each one of the stones of the Choshen was a different color. The flags in the Midbar were different colors. Okay. The clothing of the Kohen Gadol.
The stones of the Choshen.
That's what I said. The stones of the Choshen were all different colors. Every shaved had a different color. There's a lot of color in Yadus. Tefillin is black.
Zakam and Yeshivitz, it's all black and white.
Penguins, because we're all penguins. So what, you never heard that line before? That's a classic insult. The Yeshiva Bach, the Yeshiva Bach, they're all a bunch of penguins. Black and white. Now, but let's.
Rav Henoch Leibowitz said one time he came to Shir and told us that time that his father finally let him go out to buy his own clothes. He came back with a black suit and a black hat. His father said that he thought his father would be happy. His father said, "You're going to a funeral," and you know,
Chabad.
That's way back.
If you look at Chabad, the meaning of Chabad was they wore gray suits. That was the color. Chabad, look back in the 1950s. All of the pictures of the Chabad Hasidim surrounding the Rebbe, they all wore gray suits. Okay, that was the color. That was like a fact.
But Shmuel said about Chafetz Chaim, they also allowed gray and other things until they found they couldn't get a shidduch. So they had to conform.
Yeah, it's not what it used to be.
The other major league places.
I'm talking 50 years ago, but now it has changed. Absolutely. Right. Yeah.
Before World War II, in all the yeshivas in Europe, if you wore a white shirt, that was a statement, you're a maskil. You only wore shirts, colored shirts, shirts with stripes. To wear a white shirt was a statement. I'm a maskil. That was the way they were. They wore white hats, all different, multicolored. It wasn't the way it is today. Today, a lot of things have changed. I don't know how, why, where, what, but everything has changed today. But let's go back to this idea. I think this is a very important idea when it comes to tefillah. Moshe Rabbeinu said to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem, Hareini no es kodach. Every time HaKadosh Baruch Hu reveals himself, Hashem is or. Ki bo'orcha nire or. Chanukah, or, light. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when he reveals himself to this world, when he performs a miracle, when things like Yehudim Hoysa Oira Simcha Vesasim Vikar, Oira, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu reveals himself, it's symbolized in color. There's an element of color when HaKadosh Baruch Hu reveals himself. And every person in every situation in their life, they get a small glimpse of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Moshe Rabbeinu asked Hashem the ultimate question. Hareini no es kevoidecha. I want to see it all. Show me everything. I want to understand tzaddik v'raloi, rasha v'toivloi. I want to see it all. Hashem said to Moshe, lo yirani ha'adam v'chai. You can't see me. However, I'll do you a favor. Enter into the cleft of the rock. I will pass before you. V'ro'isa es achorai. Ufonai lo yera'u. You will see me from behind, but you will not see me from the front. Rashi on that pasuk tells us, what did Hashem show Moshe Rabbeinu? The kesher shel tefillin. The ritzuos. The ritzuos tied in a knot. We have a halacha l'Moshe Misinai that the ritzuos must be perfectly black. Shachor ko'oireif. Whatever that black is. Obviously, there are many shades of black. Not every black is black. Not every black hat is the same shade of black. Okay? Black is, but shachar, whatever that color is, shachar ko'oireif. Why? What is the halacha l'Moshe Sinai? How is that related to Moshe Rabbeinu's request? Harei nos kvaydech and Hashem showing Moshe Rabbeinu the kesher shel tefillin. The answer is, because black is the color that absorbs all light. And the scientific proof to that is the temperature. If you put a black object in the sun and put next to it other objects with every other color, and you measure the temperature, you will discover that the black object is the hottest. Why? Because black absorbs all rays of light. Other colors reject, they reflect. White rejects everything. It reflects, it does not absorb. Being that Moshe Rabbeinu said to Hashem, I want to see it all. Hashem said, you can't see me, but I'll give you a token fulfillment of your request. I'll show you the back of the Ritzua, the Kesher Shel Tefillin, the Dalet. Being that is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu showed Moshe Rabbeinu, that's where it was fulfilled, Hareini Na, that is what absorbed all of the light of Hashem. And that is why the Ritzuos must be black, perfectly black. When a person leaves this world, there's no longer a barrier between the absorption of Hashem's radiance. The gashmis of this world is no longer holding him back from being able to see Hashem. We live in a world where we're clouded. We have brain fog. We have brain fog our whole lives. We're not able to fully grasp that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is present amongst us. When a person leaves this world, that brain fog disappears. There's clarity. The neshama absorbs. That's why the color of death is black. It's not a bad color. It's not a bad color. It's a color which represents the full absorption. Now, we also borrow from that concept, and we tell a person, you know, if you're going to do averos, so go to a place, where no one knows you, and dress in black in order to scare you. You dress in black, so you, in your mind, you associate black with death, and it's not going to be good after death for a person that does averos. That's secondary. This that we dress in black at a funeral, the primary reason is because it's a moment of absorption, that the neshama has now accepting all of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's light. Here we have, in this pasuk, we have here, the Radak tells us, three already in this sefer, three references to the Dalet Malchus. He's making a parallel to what it says in Perek Aleph, to what it says in Perek Vav. In Perek Aleph, it describes the horse with the same exact words. There's red horses, there are white horses, and there are horses that are called Sirukim, which the Mefarshim there mean, we mean sweet, translated, usually streaks. I don't know what that means, streaks, just lines. Lines.
What does that mean, that word?
No, there means, sorry, I don't know what it means there. I don't know. I don't know, I'm not sure. So, but here, it says Sirukois, and there all the commentators explain that in that context, the word Sirukois means multicolored. It's a little brown, a little yellow, a little green, a little orange, a little blue, v'chulu v'chulu. Here, we are substituting the word Sirukois with black. What's the difference? Here, there's a conglomeration. All of the elements, the midos, color represents a person, when you get dressed. No, it's a big thing to get, the way you present yourself, the color, the way you present that, the way you present yourself, it makes a big difference. I don't know if you remember, but Obama, President Obama, Barack Obama, he always wore dark. Okay? Not just the skin. They're going to come kill me for that, right? That's Rashi, the area in Pasuk Aleph?
Yeah.
Okay, but what color it is, but if I'm working with the Malbum and the Mitzudois, who says there in Perek Apasachas, it means multicolored. Obama, he always wore a dark suit, black or navy. There was one day he wore, I don't know if you remember this, it made the news, the headlines all over the world. He wore a light gray suit. He gave a press conference. It was toward the end of his presidency. He wore a light gray. The first time, can you imagine, 8 years and 7 years, he wore a light gray suit. And it was the talk of the day. The whole world was talking about Obama's gray suit, that he looks crazy. And he never wore it again. That suit went to the garbage. He never wore it again. So obviously, it goes to show that when a man, when you get dressed, the way you present yourself, color says a lot. I don't have to talk about women, women, they obviously color means a lot. I didn't know, I'm not into women's fashion, Baruch Hashem, I was an Eretz Yisrael, it was Taka Mamash 1 year ago. It was 1 year ago, Mamash exactly 1 year ago, I went to a Simcha in Eretz Yisrael, and my brother made a Simcha, and they had Sheva Brachas on Shabbos. And I noticed, I don't really notice these things, but I noticed all of the women were wearing black.
In America too. Yeah.
And I asked my brother, how come?
Because black is the new black.
All the women, what is this over here? Black? What?
It makes fashion trend.
Okay, it's a trend. I thought it was like a religious thing. It's not a religious thing to wear black.
No, I doubt it.
What's going on over here? All the women, Shabbos, Shebrachas, I'm not used to this, whatever. I don't know. Not that I pay attention that much. But obviously, color means a lot. The Kohen Gadol wore techeles. The me'il was blue. The ephod was multicolored. The top of the mishkan was made from tachash or tachash. What is or tachash? Multicolored. A multicolored animal. Chazal, the targum of the word tachash is sos goina, which means sos. It took joy, begavonim shaloi, in its multicolored garment, in the multiple colors. Yeah. It's interesting that the tefillin, on the top of the tefillin, what do we have on top of the tefillin? Two shins, or two sins. And what do two sins?
Sos,
to rejoice. Mm-hmm. And what covered the mishkan? Tachash. And what is tachash in Unkelis? Sos goina, which means sos, it takes joy, begavonim sheloi, in its multicolored hide. What is black? Black is the synthesis of all the colors. It represents the true multicolored garment. So on our tefillin, the or of our tefillin, the minug, it's not a halacha, the batim have to be black, But it's not a halacha, it's a minhag. The only thing that al pi halacha must be perfectly black are the ritzuis. On the outside of the bag, the outside of the ritzuis, but the tefillin do not have to be black. The minhag is to make it black. And it's not a coincidence that it's called, there are two sins, sus, and black represents the absorption of all the colors. Sus, begavonim shaloi, the joy of the multicolored, the black which absorbs all of the colors of that are found in the color black. So over here, I'm just pointing out over here, is that over here we have the same idea here in the Radak. We are describing Parasamadai. We learned the last 2 days that Parasamadai is called black because they blackened the faces of the Jewish people in the time of Haman with the Gezerah, Lahashmir, Laharag, Abed, either because of the fasting that they engaged in or because of the Tsar, their faces turned black. The Radak is giving us a new interpretation. Black really refers to being multicolored. It's not describing the victims. It's describing the perpetrators, describing the nation, this nation. Okay, let's go further. Back to Perek Vav in the Radak. Okay, I lost the place. Give me 1 moment, please. Back to Radak. We're up to over here. Pasuk Gimel on page 763. Uvmerkava Hashlishis Susim Levanim. The third chariot had white horses. What is the significance of white? Rem is the Malchus Yavon. So the Radak is learning like who? He is learning like the Mitsudois. Who said it was Yavon? I think it was the Mitsudois, right? The Mitsudois says that the white represents not like Rashi, like the Mitsudois that says that white is Yavon. The Mitsudois explained why is white Yavon? Because they dressed in white. They wanted to look beautiful. They dressed in white. Remez the Malchus Yavon, v'lo yodanu lama kino esam balav bilavon. The Radak says, I don't know why we're calling them white. The cause of Rabbeinu Sadia Zal, okay, over here, Sadia over here is getting honorable mention twice. First in Rashi, and now the Radak also is giving him honorable mention. Alexander the Great. He was a wise philosopher. Wisdom is compared to white. So the white is a metaphor for wisdom. You ever hear that before? I never heard that before. The Chacham wore white.
Yeshivas, they all wear white.
But that's because of the Chachmah? Well, that's because of Tahara, purity. I don't know.
What's the color that to show?
Wisdom. Over here he's saying that Chachmah, the one who possesses Chachmah is white. Why? Because it's pure, it is refined. So the people who possess Chachmah, they were white. Since Alexander the Great was a very wise man, is he known for his wisdom? Alexander the Great is known for his might. He's known for his military power. He's known for his gevura. Is he really known for his chokhmah? I'm not sure. We're not so familiar with this concept. But over here, that's what he's saying. That the Yavam was the chokhmah, and chokhmah is compared to white. Now, if you would ask me,
he had a private tutor. Was Aristotle his father hired a great, private tutor for him to the greatest mind of the day, so to speak.
I know, but there are a lot of oisvarvs out there that also had very big Rosh Hashivas as their Rebbeim. A lot of them, right?
It was very interesting, by the way. Last week in the Science Times, they had that the beyond all the dark skies, that the black holes and everything, and it gets darker and darker. Suddenly, out in space, there's some light, and they can't figure out what it is.
Really?
Light that they... they're thinking that either light maybe escapes a black hole or they don't know where it's emanating from. But there's light out there way beyond.
It's a new discovery.
Have no idea where it's coming from or what it is.
A new discovery. Very interesting. If we would continue the same approach idea that we said before, the black absorbs everything and you would apply it to Yavon, what was Yavon? Chanukah. We're now in the middle of Chanukah. The rejection of spirituality. Basically saying, Hashem, I don't want to see you. Moshe Rabbeinu said to Hashem, Hareini no es kvaydecha. I'm desperate to behold your presence. Yavan, the essence of Yavan is to reject, to completely remove any spirituality, any small mashu of spirituality from this world. The rejection of spirituality. Wearing white represents the rejection of light. So, I mean, if you work with this approach, there's an idea to explain white. Okay, on the other hand, what white is also compared to tahara, purity. On Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, we wear white. Why white? Tahara, purity. What is purity? The rejection of contamination. Okay, white represents rejection. Question is, what are you coming to reject? Black represents absorption. White represents rejection. What are we coming to reject? On Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, we're rejecting sin. We are cleansing ourselves from the impurity of sin. So we're left with white, rejection. On the other hand, there can be a rejection of Hashem. Yavan, they rejected HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They're wearing white. Let's not forget what it said over in the Mitzudas. The Mitzudas said another interpretation. The reason why the Yavan is called white is because Yavan, I'm sorry. According to what we had in another interpretation, that the word Yavan, though the white horse is represented Yishma. That was late. I made it say fine. Let's go further. Take that back. Let's go further. Yeah.
I find it strange that to quote about Alexander, he cites Sajagon rather than the Medrash. I'm wondering, maybe he didn't have that particular Medrash.
That's possible. That's definitely possible. I don't know. Okay, let's go further. Uvmerkava Harivius. Now I'm on page 765, the next Medrash, and now we're coming over here now to the fourth chariot. What's in the fourth chariot? The Susim Birudim Amutsim. Horses that are spotted. Birudim are, now these are white spots. This is not to be confused with Sirukos. Sirukos are colorful spots, colorful streaks. This is white, this is spots. Susim Birudim Amutsim, which are Amutsim. We had a difficult time translating the word Amutsim. Most of the Farshim translate to mean the deshen ash, which means like an ashen color. I guess that means, what does it mean? The black. I guess it's close to black or dark gray. Okay, Amutsim. That was the only word that we had so far for the word Amutsim, ash. Now, Bamerkava Hazois Rosham Shnei Givonim. On this chariot, he saw the fourth chariot, two colors. Number one, Birudim. Shehu Gavon Sheyeshbay Kisamim Levanim. Okay, this is white spots. This is not to be confused again with the Sugim. Kidmus Habarod, like hail. The white of hail. Hail has a unique whiteness, I'm not aware. Vehein Besoich Goven. I guess he's calling it Barod. That's what he means. The reason why we're calling it white is Birudim comes from the word Barod. What is Barod? Barod, hail. What color is hail?
White.
I mean, it really is white? Is the hail really white?
Maybe what he's...
Well, it's frozen rain, so...
Rain is white?
When it lands on the ground, it's like spots because they're little hailstones.
But he's describing a specific color to the barot. Okay, I don't know.
He's saying, well, yeah, it's no, like he's, a white
no,
watch.
He's describing the origin of the term.
Yeah. Barod, he's saying the word barod, but
refer to the color, it refers to the
food. No, but he's saying here, look at the words of the Radak. The Radak is saying that the Markova Hazois Rosham Shnei Givonim, two colors. And one color is called Birudim. What color is Birudim?
Right. Shehu why is Gavon? It called Birudim? Because it looks like hailstone shaped.
But hail, he's coming look for a color. What's the color? The colors,
the dots are within another color. Like think like polka dots.
Okay, but read the words of the right. The dog says lovan. He says white. Shugoven a color.
Yes, the spots are white.
Okay,
and then
fine.
He tries to derive the term Birudim.
Okay, but I'm just asking you a simple question. Hail, I don't see hail all that often, but is hail white?
No, hail? It's the shape. That's what I'm trying to tell you. It's the shape, not the color.
The shape.
He's just trying to define the term.
Okay, fine. Okay. Shehu goven sheyesh boy kisamim levanim, white spats, kidmus habarod, in the image, in the shape of barod, vehem besuch goven acher. These white spots are surrounded by another color. What is that color? Amutzim. Now, what color is that? Shehem, ma sheheroloi ze hagoven b'malchus roim. Now, he's not even telling us what color that is. But it seems that the color over here that he's describing over here is black, ash. Never, you go and drive on the highway, you notice that in certain parts of the highway, the white lines that for the traffic to keep the lanes separate, so it's white, right? That's the universal color. Mm-hmm. But if you notice in some highways, they paint black, a larger area of black, and on the black, there's the white. In other words, there's a black border. On certain highways, there is the white broken lines that separate one lane from the next are not just white. They're white, but they have a black border. Why do they do that?
Contrast.
Obviously for contrast, because I guess the pavement is, I guess, cement. The pavement is close to white. The pavement is a lightish color. And when it's dark outside, and when it's dark, you don't clearly see the white line separating one lane from the next.
You're on a highway that's not asphalt.
Right. Okay. And usually it's on the concrete. You know, you have this on the right before you go. If you go to Lakewood, right after you get out, when you get out of the outer bridge crossing, mm-hmm. when you enter to the Garden State Parkway. You know, when you enter into the exit to the Garden State Parkway, there's this massive, like 7-8 lane.
Right. That's still the 440.
Okay, that's like the Wild West. That is the most dangerous part of the ride. I never understood. I always wonder why do they break up the Garden State Parkway into two parts? There is the local,
right.
And there is the express. You know why? Because if you have five lanes, you know what happens? Everyone is going 100 miles an hour. That's the Metzius. The wider the area, you lose your perception, you lose the sense of speed. Three lanes is the ideal. When you have three-lane highway, a person gets a sense of how fast he is going. You slow down, you don't go more than 70 miles an hour. When you have 6-7 lanes, mm-hmm. you'll find yourself without even realizing going 100 miles an hour.
Right.
So they break down. But that part of the highway, they have seven lanes.
Well, superhighways.
Seven lanes. It's wild. You should see what goes on there. Cars are swerving like crazy, cutting lanes. It's unbelievable what goes on there. It's just funny to watch. To sit back and watch what's going on there. That highway, that stretch, probably like a 2-mile stretch, all of the dividing white lines have black border. And it's very clear why. Because the contrast... It's so dangerous. People are going so quickly. It's so dangerous. You want to bring out the white. And the way you bring out the white is through the contrast of the black boundary. That's exactly what it says over here. This is an old concept, which goes back 3,000 years. Over here, we're dealing with the Malchus of Edom. And this Malchus, it says, Merkava Revius Susim Berudim Amutzim. There are white spots, but the white spots have a dark ash color background to bring out the white. Don't make a mistake. I'm white. I'm not a black. Don't make any mistakes over here. Don't confuse me. Okay, that's the contrast. By Merkava, so over here he writes over here, Masha Reherlo Zagovin Bamalchus Roymi Lefi Shahim Choshrim Lachzik Betoiras Moshe Shi Lovanik Barat. The reason why we can pay because they think they have the Bible. The New Testament. They have perverted, they've hijacked the purity of the Torah Shebichsav, just like the whiteness of the borod is ma'orav mare haborod shebochem im mare shochor oy mare acher. Okay, I told you contrast. I told you contrast. That's a different idea. Okay, well, we can say for another time. But the Radak is saying is the reason why there's a black background is to indicate that it's not really pure. It's a mix.
Or maybe gray. Gray, which is a mix of black and white.
Black and white, it's a mix. But and
the ash gray color.
The ash, okay. So it's a grayish color, and that serves as the background to the white. So there are some good elements. The Rambam says very nice things about Christianity. The Rambam says that because there's something called Christianity, the goyim don't go... They don't go kill everyone. There is an acknowledgement that there's a higher authority. There is something to it. Unfortunately, it didn't work out well for us. Okay, all the horrors
for him,
for the Rambam also didn't work out so well. Exactly.
Yeah. I wonder if he wrote that before or after.
Good question. But the Rambam monotheism. Well, I don't know if they believe in Shituf, but the acknowledgement, just the fact that they acknowledge that there is a God. And they have at least in their possession, they hold it to be sacred, the Old Testament, there's something there. Unfortunately, it's been distorted, perverted, hijacked, and corrupted, what they've done to it. But there is a little redeeming value. Look, you know, it's really look like the dollar bill. Think about it. On the dollar bill is an example of this word, Birudim Amutzim. It's the Merkava Harvias. Think about it, the dollar bill is really this pasuk. This pasuk is the whole dollar bill. What do I mean? Merkava Harvias. On the fourth chariot, Susim Birudim Amutzim. America, the American dollar. That is the most coveted currency in the world, at least it used to be. Okay, there's a lot of the currencies today, but the American dollar is a very is a standard. Every other currency is compared to what is the value of the American dollar. It represents the ultimate might, the power of the American dollar. And what's on the American dollar is a bright spot. Mm-hmm. In God we trust. There is the Birudim, that white spot. But unfortunately, it's surrounded by a lot of nonsense. There's a lot of amutzim which clouds those words, in God we trust. It represents the toikef of this world, the American dollar. What the American dollar represents, what it can do. The Merkava Horavius. This is Edom. Edom's koyach. Put your money where your mouth is. The Merkava Horavius. It's the susim. The koyach of the sus is symbolic of power. Birudim, there's something redeeming. God we trust. Amutzim, but there's a lot of distortion, so be very careful. Isn't that what he's saying over here?
In God we trust, all others pay cash. Title of a famous book.
I'm trying to understand. Here is Zechariah talking about different colored horses with Ramazim, about Yavon, which is in the future, and Roimi and Yishmael, which is in the future. Was this all understood by the common people who were listening to him given the
You're
book?
Asking an excellent question. I really don't know the answer. Mordechai is asking that Zechariah over here is speaking to the average man. Zechariah, think about, go back 3,000 years. Zechariah gets up in the street and he starts preaching. Or maybe he comes to shul one day. Could you imagine? Remember those olden days when you used to go daven in shul? I don't know, hopefully daven in shul. Go to shul, and then right before davening is over, right before Aleinu, a collector gets up and he makes an announcement. Rabbi Yisai, with the Rav's permission, I want to tell you about this organization I'm collecting for these soimim almanos, for this yeshiva. Please, everyone, the people are so desperate. There's no parnasa. Please give some money. And he gives a speech, right? Give a speech. So the Nevi'im did the same thing. They came to shul every day. Davening was over. It was Aleinu, before Aleinu. People are on their way out to go to work, running to cap the train. And the Nevi'im say, Rabbi Yisai, I have a message from the Ribbono Shel Olam. Ko yomar Hashem. So says Hashem. And they give over this prophecy. do we expect the average man with the average intelligence to understand what he's saying? If we today, Tavshin Pei Aleph, having the advantage of hindsight, of being able to look back, let me say it like this, today in Tavshin Pei Aleph, with the advantage of 2020, get what I just said? Having the advantage of 2020, are we able to, we struggle with great difficulty to fully comprehend, to understand what he's saying. So how then can we expect the people who are living in this time to fully comprehend the depth of the words of Zechariah? So I don't know the answer. I really don't know. Either you have to say is that the people explained, after the Zechariah gave over his message, there was a Chazoras Hamaimer, or a Chazoras Hashir. In every yeshiva, in all the big yeshivas, after the Rosh Yeshiva gives a shir, there's always somebody, or many people, who give what's called the Chazoras Hashir. They review the Shtuchoizer of Yosha Ber Soloveitchik, of Aaron Kahn, here in Avenue J and East 18th Street, of Aaron Kahn. So he was of Yosha Ber Soloveitchik Choizer. Every day after the shir was over, he gave a shir. He gave a shir basically.
That was later on.
Yeah, later, of course. Of course, right. There were many people that had this role. But he also had a role for a very long time, it seems. And every yeshiva was like that. Even all the rebbes, the Lubavitcher Rebbe, there were people that were assigned, he would speak on Shabbos. The Lubavitcher Rebbe used to give Mamad these massively long drashos or fabrengens, where he would talk for hours on Shabbos. And they had
like a matorgamin.
They had a team, no, but they didn't actually repeat it. There was no chazara. What they did was there was a team of people who were geniuses, and they were assigned to basically memorize what the Rebbe said. A team. They sat by him the whole Shabbos. Every time he spoke, and they were trained to memorize what he said. Motzoi Shabbos. The Rebbe ended very late Shabbos. He went on for a very long time. They would come together. All of them would come together, the whole team, and they would sit down, break their heads open, and review. Each one would be mechazek the other, what the Rebbe said the whole Shabbos. Every single thought, every single idea that he said, and they would write it down. They would write it down, and they would then later present it to him. He would edit it, and then it was printed in the Sichos. That's how the Sichos came about. And it's very, you know, it's very, very frightening that when the Rebbe Rebbetzin died, they interviewed many, many years ago when Ami magazine first began. There was an incredible, probably the best column they ever had. There was a column, I don't remember, was it Beryl Wine? I don't think so. There's someone else, he took it over. I know there was a column, and there was a column there in the back, the last page, every week, about Lubavitch, about, I don't know, something like that. And they wrote this up. He wrote up this thing that he interviewed all the choiz, the people, the team, or the main person who was in charge of reviewing the maimer, the sichos of the Rebbe. And he said that when the Rebbetzin died, what was it, Chana Mushka? I think her name was Chana Mushka. When she passed away.
Yeah, Mushka.
Mushka, when she passed away, the Maimorim, there was nothing to chazer.
Chaya Mushka.
When she passed away, the Maimorim, his sichos, first of all, became very short. He no longer spoke for hours like he used to. He cut down the time to almost nothing, just very, and he said nothing new. Everything he said, because these people, this team of people, they knew, because that's what they did. Every week they got together and they broke their heads open to memorize what he said, to write it down. And every week they were chidushim. And when the Rebbetzin died, no chidushim. The Maimorim became very short. He just repeated things he said years ago. He repeated old sichos. Now the Hamoin Am, new generation, didn't even know what's going on. Because many of them were not even able to hear, because you know it's hard to hear. And even those who heard, they, you know, new generation, they never heard anyway. They don't anyway know what's going on. But these people who were, you know, appointed, this is what they did. They were very, very disturbed that what's going on here. The Rebbe is not saying anything new. He's just repeating old stuff. And he cut down the content. And to the world, it looks, everything is the fine, everything is the same. Goes out to the Kvarim, he goes here, he goes there, they take pictures. He was healthy. The Rebbe was healthy. When they were, after the Rebbe passed away, to the naked eye, there was no difference. But they knew. They knew. The Chozrim, they knew that the Rebbe was suffering very much when his wife passed away. No one else knew. They knew. And they wrote up this amazing article. He wrote up describing the conversation he had, interview with the Chozrim. And like, they were very, very disturbed. What's going on here? They knew, but other people did not know. So Mordechai here is asking a very good question. How did, if we today have a very difficult time comprehending what's going on here, and we have the benefit of hindsight, of 2020, in the year of Tavshin Pei Aleph, okay, those two come together, how do we expect them to know what was going on, these very mystical, esoteric, obscure words of Zechariah? I don't know the answer. Either the people there were on a very high level, maybe we don't understand who we're dealing with, or maybe they were Chozrim. He spoke very esoteric words, and people, there were people there, great people, who were able to distill, to elaborate, to explain. My father, Zichron Levech, always told me, I told this to you before. Oh no, not my father, my grandfather, of Mordechai, my father's father, told me that you know, he was very close with Aaron Kotler. Of Aaron Kotler, you couldn't understand a word he said. The average person, 99% of the population, when he would speak, you couldn't understand a word he said. He would speak rapid fire fast. He was fire. The word just came out of his mouth in fire. And he was so brilliant. When he would say, you couldn't understand what he was saying. And of Aaron Kotler, he was called to speak all over the place. He ran around raising money, this, that. I mean, he was the Bar Hatzalah. And who was his right-hand man? Irving Bunin. And my grandfather was very close with both of these people. And my grandfather, he told me, he never understood. It was like the biggest miracle, the biggest moifes in this, to see if Aaron Kotler, this is standard, this is the way it was every day. If Aaron Kotler would go with Irving Bunin, wherever he went, he was his right-hand man. And if Aaron would get up and would give a drasha, a fiery drasha. And the truth is, no one understood a word he said. He spoke with fire, fire and brimstone. Everyone got scared, but they didn't know a word that he said. Right after he stepped down from the podium, Irving Bunin got up and explained mila b'mila, exactly, in simple, clear words, what the Rosh Hashiva said. And my grandfather told me, he was like, how in the world was Irving Bunin able to understand, comprehend everything that he said, and just on the spot, give it over right after he stepped down? It was like very common. He spoke, and then Irving Bunin got up to explain what the Rosh Yeshiva said to the American audience. And like, he did it like it was unbelievable. He couldn't get over this, how he was able to do. There are people that have that gift. Okay, there are people. A lot of the Gedolim, see, today we live in a world today that if you're not going to do well on television, don't try to be a Gadol Hadar. Right? Today, that's the attitude. If you want to be today, if anyone here wants to be a Gadol Hadar, you have to, you know, take acting lessons. You have to know how to speak, how to get up, how to dress, how to present yourself, how to say a good story. Right? That's what you need today to be the Gadol Hadar. If you can't do that, don't even apply. Rav Moshe Feinstein and Rav Aaron Kotler and Rav Rudiman, when they spoke, no one understood a word they said. Rav Mayevsky, is that true? Rav Mayevsky, you knew Rav Moshe very well. This is
I don't know. I understand. I mean, I went to a lot of his shiurim. I had no problem understanding. I thought he explained everything
right.
Very nicely.
But publicly, in the public,
that was my impression.
Okay, maybe I'm mistaken with Rav Moshe. But I was told from I've heard this a few times that when he spoke by a convention, when he got up to speak publicly, he spoke very quickly. And you know,
well,
he
that, all right.
I and mean, he was a European
about it,
right, and he was a European. His Havara, he had a very interesting Havara. I was shocked. I once got a tape. Someone taped him davening Ma'ariv, regular Ma'ariv. Someone put on a tape recorder right next to him. They sell it now for $1.50. I bought it for $1.50. I bought the recording of Rav Moshe Feinstein davening Ma'ariv. I was shocked. The Havara is a very different Havara. That's how Rav Moshe sounded. It's something very different that you're not used to. So I could imagine that when he spoke publicly, very Litvish, more Litvish than Litvish. And
well,
he was a Russian.
He wasn't Rav Moshe, he was in his family, Mesha.
Mesha, and he was also Russian, so there was also
yeah.
A,
well, that's why it's Mesha. My grandfather was also Mesha. There was a
Russian element in his Havara, plus Litvish, plus you know, he came to America when he was relatively young. It was very complicated. Okay, very very complicated. His Havara, and when he spoke at a convention, most people didn't understand what he said. And there was someone that got up to explain. I remember very clearly. I was also amazed to him. I was a little kid then. I was in Kim Mogin Avram, and it was a big ordeal that Rav Yitzchok Rudman, the Rosh Hashiva of Ner Yisrael, was coming to visit the camp. There were a lot of Talmidim, a lot of the counselors in Mogin Avram in those days that were Talmidim in Ner Yisrael from Baltimore. Most of the staff really came from Ner Yisrael. And I guess they had connections, so they invited him. This is Mamash, like the year before he died. It was shortly before he died. And they made such a big deal, you can't even imagine. Everyone had to get dressed in Big Day Shabbos, put on your Shabbos clothing. And everyone had to line up. And they had this procession. It was a band. They sang. Like, you know what they do in camp? They made a big, it was unbelievable. I still remember it. It made a very big impression on me. Kavod HaTorah. It was a very chashuv thing for children, what they did. It was very, very chashuv. And he came the end to the shul. The shul was packed. Packed. It was a zaken. It was like a year before he died. The shul was packed. And he came into shul and he spoke. I can guarantee you, not one person in the whole place, they understood a word he said. And the place was jam-packed. There was a person, his name was Rabbi Lapidus. He should be good and well. I haven't seen him in many, many years. He was like a director of the camp. He was one of the rabbeim in Ner Yisrael. He was there. And I remember him. He was standing right there, right next to Rav Rudman when he spoke, with a notepad. And he was writing down very quickly. As he was speaking, he must have spoke like for even 20 minutes, maybe even half an hour. No one understood a word he said. But Rabbi Lapidus was writing down on his notepad, word for word. And then after the Rashiva is finished, he sat down, and then Rabbi Lapidus got up. He was a speaker. And he said, let me now review with you what the Rosh Hashiva said. And he gave over in a very beautiful way for the children, the whole place, everyone came out of the woodworks. All the men, women, and Anoshim, the Taf, the Goyim also came to see what was going on. Everyone came. It was a big deal. And he gave over. He was the Chayzer. He explained what he said. So Rav Mordechai is asking a very basic question. What's going on here? The Nevuas of Zechariah are Sosum. The Navi spoke to real living people. If we don't understand what he's saying, and we have such a major disagreement among the Mepharshim as to what exactly he said, can we expect the people that he spoke to understood a word that he said? I don't know. Maybe they were geniuses. They understood. Or maybe there was a chayzer. The same way today, it's davar pasha, there's a chayzer. There was a chayzer then. Today, there's no chayzer, because today, in the modern world of 2020, if you don't, like I told you, if you're not trained in Hollywood, don't apply for the position of the Gadol Hadar. Unfortunately, we've all been influenced by, you know, you have to put on a good show. If you don't put on a good show, then unfortunately you're not going to get much of an audience today. All right, we're going to stop over here. Mircea will continue tomorrow. We'll take a very short break, and then we'll talk about a few more laws of Chanukah. And then I want to talk about the significance of the sixth day of Hanukkah. The sixth day of Hanukkah is a very significant day. We're going to spend some time talking about that when we return after this commercial break from who? Who should the commercial break be from today?
Campbell Soup.
From Ace Hardware. Ace Hardware. Buy your shovel today, Rabbi Sai. Tomorrow, you're not going to be able to get to the store.
Not going to be able to get to the shovel either.
Michael.
Yes.
Give me your email. Tomorrow? I want to send you something that David Stern sent me.
Okay.
Okay.